This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. This is your Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your nutritionist, Layla Mudin, MSRD-CDN, Master of Science in Nutrition and Exercise, RD, Registered Dietitian, or RDN, Registered Dietitian Nutritionist, as we're saying now, and CDN, Certified Dietitian and Nutritionist. So, I want to talk to you today, and by the way, you can email me your questions, topics of interest, so that I could talk about it on this podcast. You can email me to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. So, central obesity, that's abdominal obesity, is found to be linked to lower brain volumes. Carrying, and you've heard me talk about abdominal fat and dementia. I've written about it in the newsletter as well, and that central obesity is much more of a health problem than the subcutaneous fat, you know, the fat under the skin, or women, the fat around the hips and thighs is just a little bit better than having fat around the middle. Carrying extra body fat, especially around the middle, is linked to lower brain volume. We found a linear inverse association between increasing body mass, BMI, increasing body mass index, and lower gray matter volume, and also increasing waist-to-hip ratio. If you have a high waist-to-hip ratio, you're carrying more abdominal fat. And that more abdominal fat, an increasing waist-to-hip ratio, is found to coincide with lower gray matter volume as well. And this is coming out of Loughborough University in Leicestershire, England. But the lowest gray matter, the scientists say, the lowest gray matter volumes were seen in people who were both obese and had high waist-to-hip ratios. Like, you could be of a normal weight or a normal BMI, if I may call it that, but if you're carrying more of your weight around the middle, that's a problem. But they found that this was a much bigger problem. They found much lower gray matter volumes, brain volumes, with both obesity and high waist-to-hip ratio. So you've got to already be obese. That's where it's most problematic. Obesity, we know, has broad effects on physiology. We know that it contributes to cardiovascular disease and diabetes, but it's also becoming increasingly likely, increasingly likely that it's associated with brain health as well. Well, here's the clue, everybody. We have had our twin epidemics of obesity and diabetes, right? Or diabesity, as we like to sometimes call it. Well, the next epidemic is Alzheimer's, is dementia. And here they're finding an association. So these results of this particular study suggest that if we can control obesity better, at a population level, then this could be one way of reducing the future dementia epidemic, say the scientists. Yes. We know neurodegenerative disease can have a cardiovascular origin. We also know that fat tissue, called adipose tissue, fat tissue, especially that around the middle, produces inflammatory cytokines. Now, you know that it's not just a fat depot in there. It acts like a gland, like an organ, and it produces these inflammatory cytokines. There's also a link between adiposity, meaning fat tissue around the middle, and diabetes. And diabetes is also linked to degeneration of the brain. Case in point, Alzheimer's being called type 3 diabetes. It's a type of diabetes in the brain. And by the way, the study was published online January 9th in the journal Neurology. The scientists noted that previous studies have suggested that obesity is a risk factor for dementia. We wanted to try and understand the mechanism for this, they say. Gray matter atrophy is also a risk factor for dementia. We wanted to investigate whether there is a link between obesity and gray matter volume. This study includes a considerably larger population than previous work that has looked at this issue. And our results suggest there does appear to be such a link. So for this study, the researchers analyzed data from the United Kingdom Biobank database, a large population-based observational study of 500,000 people. Talk about a big sample size, right? 500,000 people. For the current analysis, researchers included data on 9,652 participants with an average age of 55 years who had had an MRI brain scan. Data was also available, pardon me, on BMI, body mass index, waist to hip ratio, and total fat mass as ascertained from bioelectrical impedance. That's a body composition study. We've got that in our office, a body composition scale. So the results showed that 18.7% of the participants were obese. That means a BMI of greater than 30. You know, a BMI more than 24.9 is overweight, but a BMI of 30 or above is obesity. So results showed that 18.7% of the participants were obese. And after adjusting for a range of covariates like age, physical activity, smoking, hypertension, higher levels of all obesity measures were related to lower gray matter volume. Take home message, lose weight. Lose weight, especially around the middle. The combination of overall obesity and central obesity, as defined by a waist to hip ratio greater than 0.85 for women and 0.90 for men, was associated with the lowest gray matter compared with that in lean adults. Obese participants who also had central obesity, which was present in 72%, had lower gray matter volume compared with those who were not categorized as centrally obese. Specifically, they found that 1,291 people who were both obese and had a high waist-to-hip ratio had the lowest average gray matter brain volume of 786 cm. This is the measurement, the unit that they used, compared with 3,025 people of healthy weight who had an average gray matter brain volume of 798, and 514 people who were obese but without a high waist-to-hip ratio who had an average gray matter brain volume of 793. So it's really all about that central obesity, is what they're implying here. So the data suggested that obese participants without central obesity, abdominal obesity, had a gray matter volume similar to that of overweight participants. This fits in with previous studies suggesting that subcutaneous fat in the hips and legs may be linked to healthier metabolic profiles compared to central obesity, which may provide partial support for the concept of metabolically healthy obesity. So I would say to you, which kind of obesity would you prefer? Abdominal obesity or hip and thigh obesity? You have to go with the latter because it's somewhat healthier. All obesity is not good, of course, right? But if you had to choose which is the lesser evil, the central obesity or the hip and thigh, you would go with the hip and thigh is less evil, so to speak. The researchers also looked at the role of diabetes, which was present in 2.9% of the sample population. Participants with diabetes had lower gray matter volume compared with those without the condition. But when diabetes was added as a covariate, the association between BMI and gray matter was only partially weakened, partially attenuated. Associations between obesity and gray matter volume were only partly explained by diabetes in this present study. So, in another exploratory analysis, central obesity was also related to various regional brain volumes, including, these are the different parts of the brain I'm going to mention here, including in the caudate, putamen, pallidum, and nucleus accumbens. Different regions of the brain we're describing here. So, in another exploratory analysis, obesity was also related to various brain region volumes. So not just gray matter, but in these other regions. No associations between obesity and white matter were apparent, interestingly. Okay. So the scientists cautioned that this is a cross-sectional observational study, so a causal link cannot be confirmed from this data. We know this. It's an observational study. It's cross-sectional. It's not a randomized, double-blind, control trial, yada, yada, all of that. It's not. It's not well-controlled. It's observational. And it's a cross-section. So they cannot confirm or link cause and effect. But all that they can say is that there is a possibility and that this study is actually hypothesis generating. So they can actually generate a hypothesis in looking at this observational study. In the paper, the researchers note that it is unclear whether structural brain abnormalities drive obesity or whether obesity induces changes in gray matter volume that play a mechanistic role in future risk of neurodegeneration? That's an excellent question. The research has also added we need further studies to provide prospective evidence as to whether long-term weight loss can bring about structural improvements in the brain. But I would say this is another potential reason not to be obese. Hey, no kidding. And again, this is published in the journal Neurology, and it was published online on January 9, 2019. Speaking of central obesity, or speaking of beer belly, I should say, Bud Light debuts bigger nutrition labels. I'm actually looking at this picture where you would get a six-pack of Bud Light in a box, and on the side of that box, you've got the nutrition facts label. And, you know, it's something you don't really see. So, beer drinkers can't claim blissful ignorance for much longer. And starting next month, packages of Bud Light will have prominent labels showing the beer's calories and ingredients, as well as the amount of fat, carbohydrates, and protein in a serving. And Bud Light is likely the first of many to make this move. The labels, they're not legally required, but major beer makers agreed in 2016 to voluntarily disclose nutrition facts on their products by the year 2020. And I'm looking at this label here on Bud Light, ingredients being water, barley, rice, hops, and serving size is 12 fluid ounces. The amount per serving, the calories are 110 for a 12-ounce can of Bud Light. And there's no fats in here, but the total carbs are 6.6. No added sugars, obviously, no protein or anything else. Many brands, including Corona Light, Guinness, Heineken, and Coors Light, already have calories and other nutrition information on their bottles or packaging, but it's in small type or hidden on the bottom of the six-pack, and ingredients aren't listed. Bud Light went with a big black and white label. You know that black and white label that you see as the nutrition facts label? That's the same label. And it's similar to the ones required by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on packaged foods. So they list the ingredients, it shows the calories, and Bud Light contains 2% of the recommended daily amount of carbohydrates, for example. Okay. We want to be transparent, says Anheuser-Busch, and give people the thing they are used to seeing. Well, I think this is a good thing because beer drinkers cannot enjoy ignorance much longer. So, the brand's research shows that younger drinkers in particular want to know what's in their beer. Of course we do. We want to know what we're ingesting. We want to know what we're consuming, same as in our food, right? They have grown up really in tune to ingredients. And this is what Anheuser-Busch found via their marketing research, their brand research. The marketers didn't know when other brands owned by Bud Light parent company Anheuser-Busch, which includes Michelob and Stella Artois, would adopt bigger nutrition labels. But the question is, will such labels make a difference in the choices consumers make? Guess what? At least one study suggests that they won't. Researchers at Cornell University and Louisiana State University tracked what happened when diners were given menus with calorie counts. It found that diners who knew the calorie counts ordered lower calorie appetizers and entrees, but the calorie counts had little impact on orders for drinks and desserts. Now, I may surmise dessert. Why do you want to bother knowing the calories? You know it's going to be a lot because it's a dessert, right? I guess the same could be said for alcohol, especially if you're having something like a margarita. I mean, margarita, you know, is going to have, or a frozen margarita is really what I'm talking about, or pina colada, one of those very fruity drinks with umbrellas in them. They're going to have, you know, the amount of calories of an ice cream sundae. So, an economics professor at Cornell and one of the authors of the study said diners seem to respond most to information they didn't already know. They were probably surprised by the calories in some appetizers, for example, but already knew the general range for a glass of beer or wine, right? And it's telling that a light beer would be the most forthcoming about its ingredients and nutrition information. A light beer, would you call that a dietetic beer? I don't know. So Bud Light's sibling, Budweiser, has 35 more calories and 4 additional grams of carbohydrates, according to the brand's website. And ultimately, the biggest changes may come from manufacturers themselves, not consumers, say the researchers. Since nutrition labels were first required in the early 1990s, companies have competed to look healthier or remove objectionable ingredients like trans fats. And that is actually the biggest public health victory of all. Well, I would agree with that. It's good to know what you're ingesting, the amount of calories, the carbs, and certainly the ingredients. So hats off to you. Beer drinkers, beware. That beer belly, central obesity, lower brain volume, try to do it in moderation if you do anyway. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.